This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
We'll ask Clay this as we start. Do you think any NFL head coach would trade jobs with Lincoln Riley? Yes, off to an early lead there. I say yes. Dunaway says no. Clay is with Fox Sports. Also lock it in on FS1. Republicans buy sneakers too. All those things. And he's with us courtesy of the Home Loan Expert. So we were talking about Lincoln Riley going to Cleveland, Clay. I make the argument that there's probably 10 NFL head coaches that would trade jobs with him right now because they're about to get fired in the NFL. Do you think any NFL coach would trade jobs with Lincoln Riley?
Any NFL coach?
Yeah, I mean, is there one out there of the 32? There's got to be some, right?
Head coaches.
Well, he makes a lot more.
I know.
Than many NFL head coaches, right?
I mean, there are
at the top college level, very often those guys making a lot more money. So, yeah, to me, I talked about this on my show as the details of the Hugh Jackson firing came out. The only way that Lincoln Riley to the NFL makes sense is if he believes that Baker Mayfield is an otherworldly NFL quarterback talent. And I think it would be hard for him to know that, certainly. But I think you can look at Gus Malzahn, and I think it's fair to say that we overrated how good Gus Malzahn could make any quarterback look, right? And I'll be honest, I was part of that too, because I think a lot of us saw what he did with Nick Marshall. And we said, oh, if he can turn this converted defensive back into this good of a quarterback, there's no stopping him when he actually gets the right quarterback. And certainly we based that partly on what he'd been capable of doing with Cam Newton and Chris Todd. I think since that time, we've taken a step back and said, wait a minute, it's not any quarterback that Gus Malzahn can look good. I think we underrated how good Nick Marshall was. And so the reason why I use Gus Malzahn as an example is, maybe if he's honest, Lincoln Riley is looking at Baker Mayfield and maybe he's looking at Kyler Murray and he's saying, I have had the very best possible quarterbacks I could have to run my offense over the past 3 or 4 years. And I know there's going to be a big drop off when Kyler Murray leaves. And that's the only possibility in conjunction with the fact that he believes Baker Mayfield is going to be an elite level NFL quarterback, that a move like that from Oklahoma to Cleveland could make sense at all.
Okay, Clay, before I ask this question, did you have either Auburn or A&M in that game on Saturday?
I had the under, and I felt like I got screwed on that because I felt like the under was the right side.
Okay, well, with that said, where are you on Jimbo Fisher coming out of that game?
Man, so he's 5-4, right? And I think it's hard to judge any coach in the first year because Nick Saban, if you'd said, where are you coming out of that Louisiana Monroe game? I'd be like, man, in fact, I might have. If you go back 12 years or whatever the heck it's been now, I probably said, you know what, it's hard to be that big of a buyer into Nick Saban. So I think year one, it's tough to judge a coach by. I always say you can tell by year two. And there aren't very many coaches that it's true that if they're going to be really, really good, that you can't tell by year two. So year one, you'd like to have some signs. I think there have certainly been signs from A&M. Look at that Clemson game, where you can say, hey, Jimbo Fisher is going to get A&M really back on track to win at a level we haven't won at before. I think there's almost always signs in a similar fashion in year one, no matter how good the coach is, where you can say, you know what, maybe it's not going to work for him. And so year two is when I pretty much believe you can judge virtually any coach in America as to how good they're going to be.
If Alabama's 12-0 and they're playing Georgia in the SEC championship game and something happens and Georgia wins that game, do you still put Alabama in?
Yeah, I just tweeted that out. I think Bama has to be in.
Over Notre Dame, over Michigan, Georgia would be in at that point?
I'm not sure what team it would come down to. But if Alabama is 12-0 and they continue to win against Mississippi State, Citadel, and Auburn like they have in the first nine, let's say that the closest game anybody plays against them remains 22. I don't understand how if they lose a close game to Georgia, you suddenly could say, oh, you know what, Alabama's not one of the four best teams in the country. And, yes, that would mean that one team would have to get bumped out. I think that could be a mess because let's say Clemson's undefeated. Let's say that Georgia at that point obviously would have to be in. And let's say that you also have an undefeated Notre Dame. That could mean 11-1 Alabama going up against, for instance, 12-1 Michigan, which would drive Big Ten people crazy. But I think Alabama, I mean, look, Alabama's a 2-touchdown favorite right now according to oddsmakers, over Michigan on a neutral field. If the goal is to get the best, then I think they'd have to be in. What I think you have to do is balance best and most deserving. I think Alabama could lose two games, lose the SEC title game, and lose a game against Mississippi State or Auburn, could happen, and still be the best team in college football, right? I mean, I still think they could be favored over everybody else, but they wouldn't be the most deserving. I think that's the balancing test that you get into. To me, 12-1 Alabama is the best, and they haven't performed poorly enough that you can take them away on the deserving criteria.
Clay Travis is with us, Fox Sports. Also, Lock It In on FS1 every day at 3:30. Republicans Buy Sneakers 2 is his book. And he is with us on the Bud Light Hotline. You know, Michigan is an interesting team. Obviously, they were very impressive over Penn State. Is it wrong of me that I cannot get out of my head that they were down 17-0 to Northwestern? I mean, I know it's just a portion of a game. It's not even fair, but it is so difficult for me to shake that image.
Well, I think there's a couple of things on Michigan that it could factor in as it comes down the playoff race. First of all, I think Ohio State's going to lose this weekend to Michigan State.
Yeah, they're not good. Ohio State is no good.
Yeah. So if they lose and Ohio State has eliminated themselves from playoff contention, I don't know, and it's crazy to say this given the fact that he's lost the first three games already, I don't know that winning against Ohio State, even in the shoe, is going to be a win where we look at it and we say, oh, my God, I can't believe that that Michigan was able to do this. If they were to lose Ohio State to either Michigan State or to Maryland, which, you know, Maryland's got all sorts of stuff going on, but it's not unheard of that could happen. Ohio State would be a top 15, top 18 team at best, and you're just giving them the benefit of being Ohio State as opposed to actually looking at the team. The other thing is, you just hinted on it, on that Northwestern being down 17 to Northwestern. They are not necessarily, if it's Michigan and they're 11-1, going to get the usual slingshot effect from playing against a really good team in the Big Ten title game. It could be a rematch with Northwestern, and Northwestern could be 7-5. And so I don't see that necessarily as being this, like, incredible outcome where you're like, oh, my God, they won a hard-fought Big Ten title game. If you beat a 7-5 Northwestern team in the Big Ten title game, is that something where you're like, oh, my God, we definitely have to reward Michigan for being able to win that game? I don't think so. And look, I think if you went and looked at – well, it's so far out to even be doing this hypothetical, but I could see how 12-1 Alabama could end up being up against 12-1 Michigan for the final spot in the playoff.
Do you have a take on how this has happened to Bobby Petrino? Look, I know the buyout's $14 million right now. This is a guy that was viewed as one of the better coaches, and I think you agreed with me. These two never were on board as much as I was with Bobby Petrino, but Bobby Petrino had won 69% of his games at Louisville until we've seen six blowout losses this year.
Man, I mean, they gave up 77 to Clemson. I've already bet Syracuse minus 21 against against Louisville.
Already.
If you had ever told me that I was going to be betting Syracuse minus 21 against the Bobby Petrino coach team, I would have told you that I would have had you, you know, commit me to the insane asylum. I don't get it. I mean, the wheels have come off. I was talking about this with a buddy last night while we were sitting and watching Monday Night Football, and he's a Kentucky fan. But he's obviously paid a lot of attention to Petrino over the years. And his argument is that Petrino has always left right before his program was going to collapse. And so he said, look, Arkansas, well, if he hadn't, you know, gotten in that motorcycle incident at Arkansas, he builds a program really quickly, gets them to win, and then the structure of his programs collapse, which is why he's always jumped. And he said at Arkansas, if he had stayed, he was going to have to reap the whirlwind that he had sown. He got out of Atlanta. He's jumped around everywhere just fast enough to stay ahead of the posse so that he can get out at the absolute apex that he built and not have to deal with the crumbling foundation that he leaves behind. He says that he left behind a mess at Louisville when he left and went to the Falcons. He says he left behind a mess at Arkansas, and clearly he's got a mess right now at Louisville. It's possible that Petrino just didn't have anywhere to go and that there is some argument there that has some sense that he can build up a program like he did with Lamar Jackson to being really good, but then everything starts to fall apart because he's not necessarily a great builder of programs, or even worse, maybe more accurately, a great maintainer of programs. And I think there's truth maybe to that argument that we're learning that you and I, Lance, didn't buy into before and that those other guys maybe did, because I was a big Petrino guy.
OutKickTheCoverage.com, at Clay Travis on Twitter, and he's presented each week by the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly.
Yeah, my guys at the Home Loan Expert will take care of you. It's amazing that we are, what, like 16 days from Thanksgiving?
Man.
And Thanksgiving is going to be here faster than anybody knows it. You know what happens? The day after Thanksgiving, family's out spending money on Black Friday. That credit card bill starts ringing up, and it doesn't stop until after the first of the year. If you already got credit card debt, that can be stressful. If you own your own home, though, why not take advantage of the fact that you have built up a great amount of equity and wipe out all that 20-plus percent interest on your credit card and refi your house and get your own financial house in order by the end of the 2018 calendar? Go to thehomeloanexpert.com. Ryan Kelly will take care of you. He is the Nick Saban of mortgages. Take advantage of all the growth that has been taking place in Birmingham and its surrounding areas. Get your financial house in order before the end of the year at thehomeloanexpert.com.
Thank you, Clay.
Appreciate y'all having me. Thanks a lot.
Follow Jim Dunaway on Twitter and Instagram at Jim Dunaway.